Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Gallen, and we're going to be talking about redistricting during this program here today, commonly referred to as gerrymandering. And I had to look it up where that name came from, and I'm going to have my special guest here to do a better job of probably explaining that than I am. But this is on the Michigan's ballot here in November, Proposal 2, and here to help educate us on that from Voters Not Politicians, Elizabeth Benyi. Elizabeth, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, thanks, Rick. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, let's start with kind of understanding what's at issue right now. Talk a little bit about, you know, what is redistricting and you know, why is it a controversial topic?
Redistricting occurs every 10 years based on the census, and currently in Michigan, it's the politicians that draw the districts, and they do it behind closed doors with a lot of outside influences and dark money that influences how they draw the districts. And they can use that as a political tool and weapon to do voter suppression. There's several methods that they can use, like packing, where they pack certain voters together, and then they only get that one district that they're allowed to vote in, which diminishes the opportunity to vote in other districts for a majority. They can do cracking, where they divide up certain voters and also dilute their ability to vote. They can also kidnap districts, which should be with their like communities, but they pull them out and put them into other districts. And this all manipulates the vote. Politicians today care more about getting reelected than they care about doing what is needed for local communities and for the voters. And gerrymandering actually started way back in the 1800s by a man named Jerry. He actually, his last name was pronounced Gary, but people called it gerrymandering. And he developed this salamander-looking creature in a voting district.
Yeah, she's showing me a T-shirt right now,
And this is what was called the gerrymander, and that's where the name gerrymandering comes from.
Okay. Now, so it's been around for a long time. It's been used then by both parties and throughout the country. Then.
Sure, absolutely. Let's give two examples. In Michigan, we're fairly evenly split. We've got 47% of Republican voters and 46% of Democratic voters. And we get 14 congressmen that get to go, congresspeople that get to go to Washington, D.C. to represent the state. Now, if you were to divide that up between the two major parties, you should have 7 and 7, right? It's not. It's 9 and 4.
Okay. And is that solely the result of redistricting, or are there other factors?
No,
to be fair?
No, absolutely. It is. I mean, there are other voter suppression things that go on, but the biggest problem in voter suppression in Michigan is gerrymandering. We are probably one of the most gerrymandered states in the nation. But both sides do it. In Maryland, for example, they have a little bit of a different mix of voter population. It's about 64% Democrat and about 38% Republican. And if you were to split their voters up, it should be like 6 and 4. But actually, because they did gerrymandering redistricting, it's 9 Democratic representatives and only 1 Republican. So both sides use this tool to maintain their power.
Trying to wrap my head around just how the process works and how it would be beneficial to a sitting legislative body. So if you have a group of voters saying, you know, it might be difficult to picture in a smaller populated area like Houghton County, but I'm from downstate. I'm from the Detroit area. So I can kind of picture, you know, a larger, more populated area. And if you were looking at that and saying, well, I have a lot of Republican voters, say, in the western suburbs of Detroit, and I have fewer in the east, so I want to make sure that, you know, this district's drawn up so that it encompasses mostly the western side. And then since I know that I'm not going to win a lot of votes from this other side of town, we'll encompass that as another district. They're all going to vote Democrat, so there's nothing I can do about that. But they won't have any influence on another district. Am I kind of painting the picture correctly?
You're getting, yeah, that's a very close approximation to what is going on. For instance, there's a district that runs all the way from south of Detroit, up through Detroit, and all the way north of Flint. Why do you think that is? It's because they're packing all of those voters into that district. Now, Flint has nothing in common with south of Detroit. I mean, they're not what we would consider a like community. They don't have shared schools. They don't have shared public resources. They don't have, they don't go to the same churches, etc. So they take these like communities and they divide them up and then they pack other people together so that they can control the voting population.
Well, that sounds like a... that example, is that typical of how this works when they get redrawn, or is that an extreme?
That is pretty typical, because if you were to look at the shapes of these districts, they are not regular, and they are not what we call contiguous, where they kind of touch each other on all sides, and they are not also respecting common communities. For instance, here's another extreme example, and this is pretty extreme. This doesn't happen in all redistricting situations, but this is an extreme one. In Grand Rapids, on the western side of Michigan, there's a district that runs right through the middle of the city, and it takes urban voters out of the middle of the city and puts them into what I would call suburban rural areas. And in one neighborhood, because of the way they drew the district, in a three-block radius, there are three separate voting districts now, because of the way they drew all these little keyholes and cut out the neighborhood. Now, this is a like community, a three-block radius. These people all go to the same churches, the same schools. They share the same resources. They use the same roads. But they will never be able to get anything done for their community because they have three separate voting districts. That's pretty extreme.
How are they represented fairly then, if in that situation?
That is the whole problem. That's why we called ourselves voters, not politicians.
Right. Well, because the practice has been around for so long, I guess I'm on the fence on understanding it, because I want to make sure that I do understand it. So that's why I was appreciative that you asked to come on this program so we can talk about this. Are there any benefits to politicians being able to do this every 10 years when the census comes out?
Well, of course, because then they can draw the districts. It improves their ability to get reelected. They don't have to do any campaigning. They don't have to pay any attention to what the voters' needs really are. We have a lot of problems in the state of Michigan, and I can remember a day, I'm old enough to remember, when Michigan's roads were the envy of the Midwest. You knew immediately when you drove over the border from Ohio into Michigan that you were in Michigan, because our roads were pristine. Our infrastructure was also very, very good. We had great manufacturing jobs. Now, I understand there have been a lot of pressures on manufacturing, and there are a lot more problems that drove jobs out of Michigan. But if you have politicians who are completely unresponsive to the needs of the voters and the needs of infrastructure and the needs of development in order to maintain a good manufacturing population or a good employment situation. If you don't have good infrastructure, you can't bring business into communities. You can't bring business into the state.
Well, it seems to be an inherently pessimistic view of politicians, which I know a lot of us do have that, but it's assuming that the politician's number one goal is getting reelected and wouldn't already have those interests at heart anyway. So I like to think that most of the politicians do, but I know that especially in today's political climate, we're questioning that, whether their motives are all perfectly clear. But I guess my question was there any non-nefarious positive reasons why the legislature should be able to do redistricting for changes in population or for movement of people, because it's done after the census? Is there any that's actually a good thing that we may be giving up if we take that power away from the legislature?
Well, the only non-nefarious situation would be if they truly had bipartisan or a truly transparent process on how they do this, but that's not what happens. The maps are drawn in secret. They're presented within moments before they're put on the floor to be voted for.
Yeah. Well, if it's the party in power that does the redistricting, they probably don't have to worry too much about not passing if it's going to benefit them.
That is exactly the process.
Okay. Is there something like this, is that constitutional?
It is designed in the Michigan Constitution for how the districts are drawn, but there are no rules set up that determine that it should be fair, and there are no rules set up in the Constitution of the state that prevents gerrymandering from occurring.
The Supreme Court heard cases involving this, I believe, in 2017. Am I correct?
Actually, in 2018 as well, they did a large case. There were two plaintiffs. One was from Wisconsin, which was obviously talking about Republicans that were gerrymandering in Wisconsin, and then one from Maryland, where there was the example that I gave where the Democrats were heavily gerrymandering. The Supreme Court had a non-decision. They put it back down to the lower courts. And lower courts have been kind of against gerrymandering and for gerrymandering. Some courts have done something about it, some have not. For instance, in Pennsylvania, there was a large court case and it got all the way to their state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court did indeed determine that there was gerrymandering going on. They basically ordered the legislative body to redraw districts. The legislative body, who was in power, redrew the districts, but they gerrymandered it even worse. The state Supreme Court said, you are in violation of our court order. You must redraw the districts. The legislature refused. The state Supreme Court then said, fine, we will do it. Now, I'm not really sure that that's the way we should be drawing our districts, is making the state Supreme Courts in charge of drawing the districts, because that doesn't foster any involvement, again, of the voters. And this directly affects the voters and the taxpayers. In the state of Michigan, there were two court cases, both on the appeals court and the state Supreme Court, and Voters Not Politicians were able to show that we need to change the process by which we draw our voting districts.
All right, well, we're going to talk about the proposal that's on the ballot coming up. I do want to just touch on something that you mentioned that I thought it was very important. You brought up both a case that the courts were hearing involving where Republicans were being accused of gerrymandering and another one where Democrats were being accused of gerrymandering. Now, when I did my crash course education, I was looking it up. They're, you know, just like so many other things, it's a, you know, this becomes a partisan debate. And I was wondering why that was. And as I was, you know, just reading different articles, you know, we're looking here at Michigan first, but then, you know, you brought up a couple of places, cases that were happening in different parts of the country. Well, in Michigan, we have Republicans in charge. And so it appeared to me from what I was reading that those that were in favor of the Republican-controlled House and Senate in Michigan were more, wanted to do little less as far as changing it, and those that were not in power wanted to do more to enact the change, which made it appear to be a partisan issue. But as you mentioned, and you know, and I also as just had to dig a little deeper to find out. No, it's basically something that comes whenever one party is in charge, basically, regardless if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, if you happen to be in control when the census is done and you have the opportunity to do it, you're very likely to say, well, yes, I would rather stay in office than not be in office. And if you have the ability to redraw the lines, you do. So I guess I'm just in a long ways around coming around to say that even though it is framed sometimes as a partisan argument because one party's in power and the other's not, it's something that goes beyond party lines.
And that is absolutely true. And that's why Voters Not Politicians has been absolutely adamant about the fact we are nonpartisan. We have always been nonpartisan. This affects all voters, not just the voters that are disenfranchised. But if the coin was flipped the other way, it would definitely affect the other voters as well.
Yeah, might be a different group of people that are upset, but it's still, the problem would still be existing.
Exactly. And when you look at the basic voting population of Michigan, as I described before, we're pretty evenly split. I've never, ever thought of Michigan being as a red state or a blue state. We've always been purple since the day I can remember. I mean, there's even the term called Reagan Democrats. Because we have a lot of common ideals. We have a lot of commonality in what we appreciate, what we look for in our communities, what we look for in our systems that try to help the state operate in a reasonable fashion that benefits the most people that live in this state.
Well, the question that's going to come to anybody's mind who's considering whether to vote in favor or against this proposal too is, all right, if it's not the legislature, who will be making these choices? Who are the ones that then get to redraw the maps?
So this is what the proposition comes down to. We are advocating for an independent citizens commission. This is a commission of voters that are, they're not politicians, they're not family members of politicians, they're not lobbyists, they're not family members of lobbyists. There are restrictions on who would be eligible to serve on the commission. There will be 13 people on the commission, and it's going to be fairly evenly split. Four Democratic that are registered as Democrats voters, four Republicans that are registered and as Republicans, and five independents that are not associated with either of the two major parties. And then they are the ones that would be redistricting the maps. And there's going to be rules about how to respect local communities, that the districts will have to be contiguous, meaning they touch each other on all sides. You can't have those weird, odd shapes that cut through neighborhoods and divide up a city where there's a three-block district that has three separate voting districts. They have to respect township and city lines, county lines, so that these are like communities that typically would act together in order to promote their good for their community.
Okay.
And this would be a change in the Constitution of the state of Michigan, but only changing the sections that affect how the districting process is done.
This committee of 13 people, how are they chosen? Who chooses them?
Okay, this is done primarily through the Secretary of State's office, because they're the ones that will be managing the budget for developing the district. They will send out 10,000 applications to registered voters who have been actively participating in the voting process. Also, there will be an online ability for someone to go and apply to become the commissioner. Then they are basically kind of weeded out. Like, are they related to politicians? Are they active lobbyists? Have they been actively involved in special interest groups that would have a tremendous interest in trying to control districts? And then each of the major parties also will have the ability to kind of toss out people that would they feel would not be qualified. And then out of that pool that's left, which would be whittled down to probably around 200 people, then the 13 people will be selected from that.
Okay, still by the Secretary of State's office?
Yes.
Okay, which is usually a Republican or a Democrat that's voted as the Secretary of State.
Yes, but however, remember, they have to choose four Republicans, four Democrats, and five independents.
I want to talk about how the lines are drawn in this proposal. You were talking about a long established lines already. Are you talking about townships, cities, counties being districted together?
Yes. As I said, there's going to be certain rules that they have to follow, like respecting boundaries and respecting like communities and having a contiguous, meaning they're touching each other on all sides. They're not just connected to each other by a single road or a single thin line. So there are rules on how they can draw. And this can be done very easily by computer. The same programs that are being used to gerrymander districts can be used to draw fair and equal and impartial districts as well. There was an experiment done. Over 10,000 neutral maps were drawn, which showed that you could easily do neutral maps. The gerrymandered map that is present today, it's a 1 in 10,000 chance that you'd be able to draw that. So what does that tell you?
Okay, so they've done this theoretically, like redistricted Michigan computer-wise, if this was to pass, correct?
Yeah, they drew over 10,000 neutral maps. That's correct.
Okay. So looking, I don't know if they have the data, but could they see if recent elections have been affected by the way that the districts were drawn, and would we have different outcomes?
Well, yes. Plainly, in 2016, with the representatives, we would have had a much closer even split, even if it had been 7-6, you know, or 8-6, I should say, instead of, and not 7-7, based on the voting population of Michigan. And the statistics I'm giving you come from the last census and from the last voting in 2016. We would have had a much more even split. Also in the state legislature for the House and the state Senate as well would have been a much closer split. So yes, we've shown that it did skew it.
Okay. I was just wondering on actual votes, because not everybody votes regardless of what they're registered as.
That's correct.
Okay, so we don't know if the results of the election would have been different. Just theoretically, you would expect them to be different.
Theoretically, that's correct. Because, just based on populations, we're dealing with statistics, and a statistic is not necessarily a human being, mm-hmm. because we can't read what's in the minds of human beings, which is why voting is supposed to be secret and protected.
Okay. Voters, not politicians. Who's backing, who's endorsing your movement here?
Well, we have now well over 400 organizations and individuals that are endorsing us. And you can go on the website. I mean, I can't name off all 400.
Okay, no. We don't have that much time.
But you can go, right. You can go on votersnotpoliticians.com and you can type into the search menu endorsements. It'll take you right to the page. And it will show you that it's a very diverse group of organizations and individuals that are endorsing us. And in fact, if you look at the politicians that endorse Voters Not Politicians and endorse Proposition 2, you're going to find more Republicans and ex-Republican legislators that endorse Proposition 2 than you would find Democrats. Because everybody that can sit down and actually look at the problem and do the research like you have, because you had it in your mind that you thought it was also a partisan issue, but in digging deeper, you saw it's truly not.
Now, with the couple of minutes that we have left here, I just want to make sure, did I ask all the questions that would help you to talk about the problem or at least, is there anything else that you want to add that maybe I didn't ask?
Yeah, what's this going to cost?
Okay.
Right now, we don't know where the money comes from and who is paying for the districting maps. We know that there are a lot of lobbyists and dark money and outside influences that are guiding the situation, but we have no way of identifying any of that money. So the money would come from the budget out of the Secretary of State's office, and the commissions will last for approximately 2 years to do redistricting every 10 years. And in breaking that cost down, it would be 11 cents per taxpayer per year, which means 22 cents for 2 years. Now, to improve democracy and improve the voice of voters, I think 22 cents is a downright bargain. And the money is accounted for. It has to go now through the auditing process that the state budget normally would do for any entity. But that's not what happens now.
All right. You mentioned a website earlier. If people wanted to educate themselves a little bit more, can you give that again one more time?
It's votersnotpoliticians.com. You can look at that website to find out what the actual language is on the ballot. You can look at the language of what would be changing in the Michigan Constitution as well. It's a much lengthier, and it's all written in legal language, as you can imagine. Sure. You can look also at the endorsements, and you can, if you're interested in volunteering to get the word out about gerrymandering and Proposition 2, there's a volunteer portion on that website. There's also a donation page on that website. So there's a lot of information on that page. Easy to maneuver, very user-friendly.
All right. Don't forget to vote November 6th. Elizabeth Benny from Voters Not Politicians. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.